I'm Mike Lubick of the New York Daily News and SportsOnEarth.com.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I am Andrew Jenks, documentary filmmaker and podcast What Really Happened.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and this is the Monday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this podcast Mondays and Fridays. Glad to have you joining us. Andrew, nice to have you with us. Nice to have a documentary filmmaker throw their voice in on college football. What could be a better fit than that?
An honor.
And let's begin right there with college football. Everybody's been talking about it over the weekend, despite the fact that they dragged the flipping of the cards out so long that I thought I was going to fall asleep by the time number four was flipped. But personally, I think they got it right. Alabama gets in. Ohio State, despite winning the Big Ten, is left out. A major conference is left out. But as Nick Saban said many, many times on TV on Saturday, you got to consider the entire body of work. And apparently the committee did. Guys, did they get it right?
I was shocked that they got it right. I just felt everybody was leaning towards making like the geographically balanced, conference balanced, politically correct thing, and they were going to put Ohio State in. And here's the deal, okay? The same logic that you had to apply to Alabama this year is how Ohio State got in over Penn State a year ago. And there's one other thing about this college football season and why Saban was right. There wasn't a single Saturday of the entire season when you thought Ohio State was the best college football team in America. You didn't think so when they were beating Wisconsin. You didn't think so when they were getting their doors blown off by Iowa. Alabama might not just be the fourth best team. They still might be the best team.
Mike, you're so right about that idea. Look, I don't think it's any more complicated than this. They'll never tell us. No one's going to admit it unless we get one of them over a couple of beers. And you know, wouldn't we love to do that, one of those committee members. I just think that the tiebreaker is the one I've been advocating. Who would you bet on if these two teams played on a neutral field?
Yes.
Yep. Period. Period. And the answer was Alabama is a better team in our eyesight and experience than Ohio State. And there's one other little factor in this year's one, which is Ohio State's stink bomb last year. Don't think that wasn't in their minds.
Well, I mean, why don't we move the goalposts on how this is perceived? Terrible pun actually intended here, but and realize for a second that what's going on is awesome. Can't we all agree that the entire season really is a playoff? Every game counts.
Yes.
It's like March Madness, except you college football crackheads get it all freaking fall. And if you're not very clearly in the top four, sorry, no dice. Every year a team or two will get screwed, but that's how it works. Best team doesn't always win in March Madness. It's the best team that day. It's the best system of the it's like
great.
Winston Churchill. Democracy is the worst form of government except for all the others. This is the best we have.
Well, it's better than arguing over who deserves the two spot. And that's the thing. You know, we're arguing over who deserves the four spot. Let's not take for granted the fact that 1, 2, and 3 were clearly 1, 2, and 3. And we used to fight over 1 and 2, remember? Those days. And if they go to an 8-team playoff, we'll be arguing over who gets the 8th spot as passionately as we did with the 4 spot. And that's not going to change anything either. But here, and as I'm listening to us talking, by the way, I agree with everything that has been said. Mike, I think you were the first person that I heard say a couple weeks ago, when could you imagine Alabama losing by 30 to anybody?
Yeah,
let
Paul
alone
Feinbaum.
Iowa?
Paul Feinbaum has been beaten. Mitch, it's not just me. Paul Feinbaum's been beating that drum as well.
Okay, well, I listen to you more than I listen to Paul Feinbaum. So they don't. So here's my question: as I'm listening, to everybody talk, was Ohio State ever going to get into this then? I don't really, as we're talking it now, it almost seems like there's no way you could overcome that. So unless there was, I guess if maybe every other team that was in there lost, if Clemson had lost and you had a way between Miami and Ohio State, if Oklahoma had lost, which was probably Ohio State's best chance, and then you go, well, TCU's not getting in, so we need another body. But short of that, Ohio State was never going, it seems very apparent now, doesn't it? You know, like everybody seems to agree on this, but yet there was such disagreement on Friday.
applying that logic, or you know, following up on that question, Mitch, it just occurs to me as you're speaking. What if Wisconsin had beat Ohio State and had been undefeated, but we go by this dictum of the neutral field thing with Alabama versus Wisconsin? Who among us would bet on Wisconsin in that game? No one I know of. So would
yeah,
they
but they would have made
Wisconsin?
It, Bobby. Bobby, they would have made it, though. They
you think
kinda,
so?
Yes,
I'm
I
just
do.
Asking.
No,
I'm just asking.
You
I mean,
think they
but,
boxed
see, then
out
they would
Alabama
they
in that case if they were undefeated.
All right, I'll just all right, just throw it out there.
If Wisconsin ends up being the only undefeated major, in these major conferences team, yeah, they were going to make it. But by the way, and not that the odds makers get to set any sort of agenda, look who's favored in the Alabama-Clemson game. Alabama
really?
Is.
Oh, yeah.
Can I ask you guys a question, just taking a step back here? Once I'll play the guy that takes a step back on everything. What about the idea you have this college football playoff selection committee? Is there something to be said for a poll of polls? Because I noticed Associated Press and the Amway coaches poll had the same exact take that of the four teams that should be in that Final Four. Would that make people feel better? A poll of polls of sorts?
Well, that's no, how they used to do it.
Yeah, but and we'd end up with two different national champions sometimes.
Right.
You know, you'd have the writers' poll and the coaches'
That's
poll and all that
yeah,
stuff.
In the old days.
No,
right.
This system works.
Yeah.
This system, and Andrew, we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks. Actually, my oldest son, Christopher Lubega, knows more about this than I do, said the other day, Dad, at some point after this season, somebody will once again start beating the drum for an 18 playoff. And he said, look at the way this thing shook out this year. We basically had eight teams. We had seven teams still
right.
in play on the final Saturday. This system is perfectly
well.
Imperfect.
You know what's done it, Mike, is the conference championships. Because what's tending to happen now, there'll be freak years where you know there'll be a Boise State in the mix that its conference championship doesn't mean squat. But when you have a couple of good teams from the SEC, a couple of good teams from the Big Ten, a couple of good teams from the ACC, they do kind of have a playoff now in the final week, in that, with the exception of Alabama, they were playing one another. So this past weekend was an eight-team kind of playoff, down to four, and it kind of settled itself for us. So I agree, Andrew. I mean, this is it's like the democracy quote, and you can't really come up with a better system because it's never going to be a sport in which everybody plays everybody, like the NBA and the NFL and all the rest. There's no other way to do it. You got 103 teams in the field. So you have to have an outside body making the decision.
But I want to raise another point, and there's gotta be a way going forward that an outlier can make it to the Final Four. And I don't know how that can be accomplished under the current system. Andrew, we were talking about this the other day. There's no Gonzagas in college football under this system, okay?
I see.
I wish Scott Frost's team had been very much in play on Saturday night and Sunday morning to make the tournament. But the fact is, I don't see a scenario where we could ever have a Cinderella in this system.
Are they interested in that, really? No, I don't think so. They're not,
I don't think they are. I agree with Bob. I don't think they really care if UCF gets
to play. I mean, we've really set up the wall, the Power Five and the power structure. I'll settle for that. The power structure of college football is well established, and it's clear how they feel about it. They'll pat a UCF on the head. They'll give them a nice, the best bowl game they can give them, and send them a little congratulatory letter after season, but they're not interested in cutting them in on the deal.
Andrew, let me ask you this question. You put Churchill into play today, and in this in this political world of ours, how much did Nick Saban lobby his team into the Final Four on Saturday night?
I think from what I know about from the coaches that I've gotten to know and document in time. Coaches are these sorts of guys are out of their minds, and they will do anything that it takes.
That.
And it's for them. It's not.
You're treating this like breaking news, by the way, Andrew.
No, but I don't think it ever ceases to me. I don't get how it's even something that keeps coming up. It's like these guys all every day. It's not cheating unless you get caught. And the idea that someone's promoting that is of course, what is he doing otherwise?
Well, before we walk away from this, We've talked, it's fascinating. We've talked most of the time about Alabama, and they were the one team that didn't play over the weekend. Let's talk about the games that were played, of the four that we saw, you know, that determined this.
Uh-huh.
Which to you was the most, who looked the most impressive? Was it Oklahoma. Clemson with a 38-3 win? Was it Oklahoma with a 41-17 over TCU? Was it Georgia revenging Auburn at 28-7? Obviously, it wasn't Ohio State, so nobody's going to say that. But of those three, who looked the most impressive?
Mitch, I think Oklahoma looked the best, except with this caveat. They don't play any defense, and it's going to be interesting to see. They have the best player. They got the best player in the gym, and the best player in the gym always must be a huge factor when you're evaluating these games. Clemson must be thinking, you know, what was second prize for us if first prize is the number one ranking? Because we now got to go play Alabama in New Orleans on New Year's night. And listen, I love. I don't even think he scratched the surface yet, the Georgia quarterback. I think that kid is going to be great. It was hilarious watching the Big Ten championship game. Listen to how breathless Gus Johnson was about JT Barrett. And I'm thinking, are we watching the same game? He acted like JT Barrett was the second coming of Deshaun Watson.
I totally agree. I am actually very happy that JT Barrett is not going to be.
Oh, my God.
Because I don't know which kid you get with. I've never seen a guy swing so far to the left and so far to the left in the course of the same game. I mean, he can look absolutely brilliant and then make the dumbest decision. JT Barrett has been overanalyzed. Jake Fromm, who you mentioned, I would say, to answer my own question, Georgia beat Auburn 28-7. Now, granted, this was not the Auburn team that beat Alabama. I mean, clearly, Kerryon Johnson, our favorite name in sports, was only half. He wasn't carrying on. He checked his luggage. And, you know, without him, Auburn's not the same team.
I'm not sure I follow that with the check luggage and
carry
the,
on.
No, I get that, but I
come on, nice. Michael. Words are our business.
No, but really if good. He checked his bag,
Andrew liked it.
Yeah. If
Andrew
he liked checked it. His bag,
the new guy liked it. I'm happy. The new guy liked it.
No, I'm just trying to be logical here. If he checked his
Nick Chubb, DeAndre Swift, the running game that they have, they are very good, and they benefit, I think, from being in the middle as opposed to the 1 and 4, as you pointed out, Michael. 1-4 is a tougher matchup than 2-3. I think we could see Georgia playing for the title in the second week in January.
What about two freshman quarterbacks? What about two freshman quarterbacks now who are asked to, you know, and Andrew's absolutely right. We have March Madness every single Saturday during the regular season in college football. It's why this system, I hope they never change it. But now the whole thing gets dialed up. They've got some time now between here and the semifinals. Do you have any concerns about Kelly Bryant and Jake Fromm as we go forward and do get to the Final Four?
What do you mean? I mean, concerns?
No, freshmen. Bob, you know this.
Not anymore. No, Mike, I think it's
you don't
really
think they're
changing,
freshmen anymore.
Nope, I think the whole world, their developmental process now is so radically different than what we knew in our time. This high school quarterback camps, the high school quarterback, the 7-on-7s, their entire development is different. They're much readier to play now than they would have been even 10 years ago, or maybe even 5 years ago, and certainly more than 30 or 40 or 50 years ago. So, no, it's no longer an issue, I don't think.
What do you mean, Bob Ryan, your time? This is your time.
No, this is your time. I'm trying to be politically proper here.
Right. What about Mayfield as a walk-on player for Texas Tech, a true freshman quarterback starting for a BCS school? Isn't that an incredible story to where he's come now as a senior?
Yeah, and I'm actually happy that he didn't crotch grab himself out of the Heisman Trophy. Because he did. There were times, I don't know what the hell he was doing sometimes, but man, oh man, you know, I said this the other day, bad manners, really good at football. And this kid, does he not look like he is totally ready for the next level? Oh my goodness.
Well, he is, you know, we always like in sports to talk about the star players, and you look at the quarterbacks who are going to be in this game. And he's the star of he's the biggest star of the four. I mean, Jalen Hurts, you can make a pretty good case for it. As you're talking about freshman quarterbacks, it's interesting the difference between a freshman and a sophomore now, you know, that Hurts gets there now as a second-year player, and it's almost as if he's been in the league for 10 years. You know, that's the difference between playing 1 year of college football and two, because there's so many really good freshmen in the game. But here you have Mayfield, who literally is like an old man compared to these other guys.
Yeah.
And he's an X factor. He can make a game. He could probably win a game by himself, and I think in that middle bracket, he's got a very good chance, although Georgia's defense is good. But I don't know the kind of defenses that he's played against. And, you know, when you give a college coach 3 weeks, 4 weeks to prepare for a single team, and that team's everything is its quarterback, you know that they're just going to gear up to go after him, to rattle him, to, you know, and try to, and that's the big test.
Let me just say this. Nick Saban, who may be the greatest college football coach of all time, didn't just have a few weeks to get ready for Deshaun Watson last year. He had a whole year to get ready for Deshaun Watson, and Deshaun Watson went into the big game and did it to again. And by the way, even though it's not the championship game, how fired up are we to see Clemson, Alabama 3, like Warriors, Cavs 3 in the NBA Finals last year?
Yeah, no question. No, it's become a LinkedIn history, no question.
And by the way, before we move on to pro football, there's one name that never comes up in this conversation, and I think the kid is terrific. The Alabama quarterback, Jalen Hurts, is quietly having a terrific season for Alabama.
Yeah. Well, his name comes up. I mean, he's a star.
It didn't come up today in the Sports Reporters podcast.
Well, I just brought it up, but he's a star in college football. He can do everything, and he never shies from the moment. I think he's going to be huge. I thought you were going to, and I want to discuss this before we go to NFL football. Andrew, I'm going to pose this question to you as a newcomer to this program, but I'm curious your take from the outside world, because we get a little jaded on salaries and money and these kinds of moves. But Jimbo Fisher, who not so long ago had his one national championship with a great quarterback at Florida State, and then was last seen struggling to try to beat who the hell did they play in the last game of the year, like our sisters of the weak and hopeless, to get to 6-6 so that they could make a bowl game, just signed the biggest total package ever given out in college football, $75 million guaranteed. Guaranteed $75 million for 10 years to coach Texas A&M. So he leaves Florida State, goes to Texas A&M. He's now the new salary market, because between him and Gus Malzahn, who just signed a new contract at Auburn, leveraging Arkansas, mighty Arkansas, leveraging them against Auburn, now gets $7 million. So this is the new pay system, $7 million a year. What are your thoughts about, what are all of our thoughts about this kind of money coming from schools like now Texas A&M, who clearly, if you go look at it, go read up on them, they spent like $500 million in the last couple of years. Brand new state, brand new football facility, brand new everything. And now $75 million on a coach, when of course they're still not paying the players.
I think it's one of the great American, at least one of the great American sports scams of all time that somehow has not been rectified. The idea that there are players that don't have a choice from the age of 13 or 14 are told by their teachers, mentors, coaches, that in order for them to, quote, make it in America, they have to go bash their heads, severe concussions. These are young guys that are being told what to do. I went to film school, not for too long, but briefly. I can't imagine going to film school on a scholarship, making short films, and then let's say it's NYU owning those films and profiting from them.
Releasing those
films
at Christmas.
That would be nuts. filmmakers would go crazy. We forget it. We would say, all right, we're going to go make our movies in Europe then. Screw you guys. And the idea of how more or less, I don't want to bring race into it, older men just manipulate and take advantage of kids, and that's what happens. And I don't anything other than that to me is the whole thing. I find, without being too hyperbolic, I find criminal. So those are my thoughts on the salary
on the matter.
The only athletes who derive less compensation for their level of excellence than college athletes are thoroughbred racehorses. This has gone on from the beginning of the time. It's the one thing that holds you back on loving college football completely. It's Andrew, you're right. The only ongoing hustle that I can think of is sports owners getting taxpayers to pay for their stadiums. Right. My thing was always, you want to build a stadium, go to the bank, take out a loan, and build it yourself. And these coaches have gamed the system. And let's see where Jimbo Fisher is in 5 years. Forget about 10.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for, Jimbo, because that's a school, that's a wannabe school, and it want to be in a state where the culture is football. Even though Texas, the big guy is fallen off the perch, and people keep waiting for them to get back up, it is still the team against whom they measure themselves. And now they're in a conference with a bunch of other crazed culture football people, and they're desperate to win. They're desperate. Do you realize that they charge? I have already seen this in print. I mean, his mandate is to win the national championship, which of course would be their first. And as far as I know, unless you're going to go back to the 30s and some mythical championship they may have won with Davey O'Brien, that's possible. So I'm sure somebody knows out there whether it's. I'm not making it up. They may very well have been acclaimed once upon a time as national champion, but not in our lifetime. And be careful, Jimbo. But I mean, you know, you be careful as you go to the bank in your Rolls Royce.
And by the way, he's going to face Nick Saban every year now. He's in the SEC West every year now. I mean, he was at FSU, and you know, when now Florida's down, and it's you know, not that he's got a cakewalk in his conference at FSU, but he's in the same division, same half of the SEC as Auburn and Alabama and LSU and Mississippi State. Now, this is hardly some guarantee for a guy who lost 23 games over the course of 8 years at Florida State. It wasn't like he lost one game a year. It took him, you know, he built the program up. He had that one great year in 13 where he won the national championship, but they haven't been great as of late. And I don't know, man.
Yeah. And here's Mitch, here's the thing. The coaching graveyard, and nobody will ever have to run a benefit for Jimbo, okay?
No.
The coaching graveyard is littered with guys like, oh wait, Brett Bielsma, who left Wisconsin to go to Arkansas, and that worked out so great for him in Arkansas that all of a sudden they had their eyes set on Gus Malzahn. Right. The Sports Reporters is brought to you by Freshly. Freshly delivers fully cooked, prepared meals straight to your door. No more coming home and wondering what's for dinner, because Freshly's team of chefs and nutritionists are here to save the day. You get to skip the shopping, the chopping, and the cleanup. All you have to do is heat them up, and boom, your meal is ready to eat in only 3 minutes. To try Freshly out, go to Freshly.com/sportsreporters to get $20 off your first week. That's 6 meals for $39, Jimbo, plus free shipping. This offer is only valid for limited time, so go to Freshly.com/sportsreporters for $20 off and free shipping. Consider dinner done. Okay, a lot of interesting stuff happened in pro football yesterday, including Ryan's guy, Gronkowski, with his cheap shot against Tre'Davious White of the Bills. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the most interesting game to me is the last one we saw, because the Seahawks once again showed you, even with all the injuries they have had in their defensive secondary, the possibilities that they bring to every game. Now, I know the game was at home. This is a tough stretch for the Eagles because they now have to go on the road to play the Rams. But guys, that was a bit of a life lesson on the Eagle Express, which has sailed through the regular season so far.
Well, we know it's a notoriously difficult place to play, but we also know another thing, and we know another thing. Russell Wilson is he's damn good, and he can hurt you. And you know, I didn't watch a whole lot of that game, but I saw, you know, saw some of it, and of course the guy that got you right, one play, one incredible, the throw of the year was Carson Wentz. Will we agree to that?
Pretty good.
You know the one I mean?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
How do
you?
I'm sorry, I'm digressing, but it's a damn important digression. How? Have you ever? You know, we have to be very judicious with the use of the words always and never. I say that all the time, and then I violate that thing in the next 5 seconds. I have never seen a throw like that good. He's almost down. He's thrown it. He's got a guy wrestling him down, and he throws it a minimum of 45 yards for a strike to gain a yardage. It was astonishing. I urge anybody listening to us, YouTube Carson Wentz falling down throw. That's all I'm telling you.
Okay. It was a great example of Carson Wentz's skill, but the play that turned the game was also in Carson Wentz's hands and says more about the Seattle defense. If you took the three guys that Seattle lost, okay, Sherman, Averill, and I forget who the third guy is. That's you put those three guys on any team in the NFL, they become an all-star defense. Those are the three guys that the Seattle Seahawks have lost for the season.
Yep.
Lost for the season. And they have a defensive performance against an offensive juggernaut that the Eagles have been last night, including stripping Carson Wentz on the one-yard line. Now, this is the kind of stuff that drives like a football fan like me who lives in Detroit and has to watch the Lions every week crazy, because when you get down to the one-yard line, there are a lot of teams that basically, they line up for defense, but basically they say, let's get this over with. You know, you're going in, and let's get it over with. We'll get off the field, and we'll regroup. Seattle doesn't give up. And to strip somebody at the one-yard line says a lot about your football team and about your defense. And the most impressive thing, Russell Wilson was lights out. He was Russell Wilson of old. He's just a magician, and he's in such good sync with his tight end, which was Jimmy Graham, who was great pick. I mean look at all the great quarterbacks who are doing well in the NFL have a tight end as an outlet. You know, be it Brady and Gronkowski, be it Jimmy Graham and Russell Wilson and others. Ben Roethlisberger has it as well. He, as great as they are, that defense is what impressed me. That defense is how, remember when they got to the Super Bowl and once it was defense under Pete Carroll, they're a really good defensive team, and I would not sleep on these guys. They now suddenly are the first wild card team. And this is probably you might have seen. I did watch the whole game last night. They showed that statistic, and Andrew, perhaps you saw this too. In September, they're like the 13th or 14th ranked team in terms of their record in September. In October, they're like 8th. In November, they're like 2nd. And December, they're 1st. Over the last like 5 years, They have the best Decembers ever, and if they're headed for another one, you're probably going to see Seattle being a major player in the playoffs this year.
Guys, there's a category I always like, which is attention must be paid category. That, and they're in that category. I'm not elevating them into a champion, a logical championship or a team that we'll be looking at on that first Monday in February, but they're dangerous. Yeah, there's no question.
You guys know better than anyone, I think, that there's probably always a tendency to overreact in terms of one game. But yeah. I think that, you know, clearly Russell Wilson is a guy who enjoys playing in December. And he likes playing on a national stage. And clearly he's in sync with all of his receivers, Doug Baldwin, obviously. And I think that it's not like it wasn't a fluke. This isn't a fluke. If history is any indicator, this is where the Seahawks get going.
Well, you look at the NFC, and it's very interesting. They are only one game behind the Rams in the NFC West. I think it behooves the Seahawks, because they are a vastly different team on the road, to somehow figure out a way to pass the Rams before the end of the regular season. But yeah, no, Wilson makes him dangerous. He makes plays that you can't believe that he's made. And, you know, to me, the NFC continues to be profoundly interesting. Drew Brees keeps going along. Guys, I looked up something yesterday because, you know, they won a game that they had to win yesterday against Carolina. We are this far into the season. Do you know how many touchdown passes Drew Brees has thrown this season? 17. He has only thrown 17 touchdown passes. This is a completely new imagining of the New Orleans Saints. And because they can run the ball, man, there are about five teams that you can see making the Super Bowl, maybe more from the NFC. But it has been really fun to watch Breeze because I put me down as one of being one of those people who thinks this might be his last best shot with Sean Payton in New Orleans.
I'll tell you why he throws 17 touchdown passes, because he's got two running backs that can run it in.
That's what I mean.
You know, and can you believe with Ingram and Kamara? How is this kid a third round pick? Again, sitting here watching a Detroit Lions team that can't run the football to save its life, and I can't even remember who they drafted in the third round. But you mean to tell me they could have had this kid Kamara and they passed on him, and so did all the other NFL teams as well. But this was a team, let's not forget, that started with Adrian Peterson, right? They had Adrian Peterson and Ingram and Kamara, and Ingram was the guy who kind of silently said, we don't, you know, he's a great guy. He's a legend. He's all the way. We don't really need him here. We're actually pretty good. And Peterson goes away. And these two are having fantastic seasons. And this is an old-fashioned football team, Michael. They've got a quarterback who can pass and throw 70% completion. I think yesterday was 75. He's completing 70% of those passes, even though a lot of them aren't for touchdowns. And they've got running backs. And they have something that they have not had in a long time. A pretty good defense.
Pretty good, yep.
A pretty good defense.
Can I just take a really quick step back? Pete Carroll, to me, I have a love-hate relationship with him. I can't sort... You look up, and this might feel a bit out... This might be a bit outlandish here, but you look up any NFL coach in terms of just Google their name, and their Wikipedia comes out, different news articles come up. You look up Pete Carroll, and it takes you to PeteCarroll.com. And it's a whole, you know, branding thing on Pete Carroll. And I just don't, you know, a capitalist at heart, I paperback edition book that he had and this whole thing. It's his signature on the front page. It's just, the guy is I don't know if it's that interesting of a character study, but there's something there.
You mean it doesn't start with Super Bowl 49? It doesn't start with the second and goal with the one and the super. It doesn't
Ooh,
start
come on.
There.
No, huh? It starts with ways really? To buy his book, Win Forever.
Oh, wow. Win Forever, building a culture of Bob. You know what, Bob? Get with it, Bob. Win Forever, building a culture of high performance, except when you're on the 1 yard line in the Super Bowl and you let your offensive coordinator make a call that will forever alter your place in NFL history.
Although,
except for that.
I should add, in fairness to Pete Carroll, he has a nonprofit organization. He doesn't have nine nonprofits like Mr. Mitch Albom, but he has one.
Is that at the top of his webpage, too?
You got to scroll down for that one.
Yeah. The fact that you're still on his webpage.
All right. I'm exiting out. I'm done.
Yeah. But Pete has been around a long time. In a lot of different incarnations. Michael knows him well from New York, and we all know his time out at USC and other
and
things.
And the Patriots before Bill Belichick, Mitch.
That's right, yeah.
Yes, I can speak to that as they regressed each year. Yes, I can speak to that. Which
all right,
meant
Bob,
that he got
speaking
fired
of the
in favor
Patriots.
Of some guy that was
yeah,
a coordinator
speaking of the
in
Patriots.
New York.
Hey, Ryan.
A failed
speaking,
coach in Cleveland.
Hush.
Whatever happened to that guy?
Don't deflect.
No, don't try to obfuscate, Ryan. Speaking of your Patriots and your favorite player, we know you watch the games with an 87 jersey on Sundays. Why was Rob Gronkowski not thrown out of that? You know, they talk about a suspension for Gronkowski for that out-of-bounds hit. How about the officials in the game who didn't toss him? They ought to be suspended, too.
I would think that their supervisors should be calling them in on the carpet today and saying exactly what you just said. It was an appalling act. There is no defense for it. Even Bill Belichick apparently went up to Sean McDermott and used the word bull with the second word to talk about what that play was. No amount of alleged interference or holding or allows a man to go in and do what he did to that guy, Tre'Davious Davis. No way at all. It's awful. You know, he is just that transformed him out of the lovable lunkhead Ron Potemkin category into a thug, and that's something that he has never, that's a category and an area he has never entered onto before, as far as I know. And it's awful. And certainly it's a hefty suspension. And I would certainly think that it calls for a minimum of a one game suspension. And you're not going to get me to, in any way, shape or form to defend him at all. Now, he did offer an apology, so forth. But I wish it had been a bit more contrite and not justifying himself with the seven years of this and that. No. This was an egregious act, an indefensible act. And that's it, period.
Well, first of all, Tre'Davious White can be very grateful that his head wasn't cocked at a particularly different angle.
That's right.
When Ron Gronkowski threw the weight of his entire body on top of him and landed on his head as well as his upper shoulders. Because you just, you know, all it takes is a quarter of an inch. You talk to any doctor, you know, who say you missed this by a fraction. They look at your vertebrae and say, if you've been a quarter of an inch the other direction, you'd be paralyzed for life. That's not a small body that he's heaving there. That's a missile. And he throws himself on a totally defenseless guy who's face down, can't see him coming, can't brace for him or anything like that. You know, I don't know how you legislate these kinds of things. I don't know what's worth one game and two games and all the rest. But something that is so premeditated off of something that is so insignificant. They won the game 23-3. Okay, this wasn't some championship game. This was New England Buffalo. And it wasn't the last play of the game. It didn't determine anything. Don't tell me tempers run high in these kind of moments and all the rest. If you can't control yourself on a play like that when you know you're going to win the game, then the guy's a time bomb. And I don't know that one game is enough for something like that. Again, I'm not the person who legislates this. And you get into the, well, if you give him two for that, then what about this guy and all the rest? I just know that, Andrew, I you know, it's as someone who doesn't spend perhaps as much time in sports as we do.
Nope.
When you saw it, what was your reaction to it?
I don't – when it comes to concussion – when it comes to those sorts of hits – in any game, I don't understand why the league would be hesitant in terms of a harsh suspension. They're getting these are easy layups in terms of decisions. Like he at least two games. There's no question. There's no reason for it. It's one of the easier decisions that they can make. What I love about I'm being a bit maybe negative here in some of my NFL comp, but I don't understand the NFL. That hit happens. We have all these concussions that are overlooked. You can go through the list of things that the commissioner overlooks. And then I just couldn't find myself but pausing the game and rewinding it when they blur out Tom Brady saying F you to the coaches. It's like they take that funny step of being able to get, like, there's no way you can see him cursing, and they have the blur on and everything. The NFL decision-making to me just, again, just seems a bit, I don't know, criminal.
How about, Andrew, how about this? How about a guy who has spent as much time hurt as Gronkowski has the last several years?
Right.
How about him doing that to a defenseless player on the ground? And it could have been much, much worse. Give him a couple of games.
Yeah.
But wait a couple of games. So take his ass out of the Steelers-Patriots
exactly, game. Exactly, not the Miami game. Yeah, give him two games so that they can win Miami with him not even getting on the airplane. But, have him miss the Pittsburgh game, and it might make a difference, because in the AFC, that is the prelim for the – I'd be shocked if we're not seeing that game again.
They're going to play again, you know, and there's already been intimations from the Buffalo side that, you know, we have taken notes, shall we say. And, Mike, you're so right. I thought about that almost immediately. How can Gronk do this, given his history and the fact that, you know, he's always lamenting that these little DBs can't bring him down other than going for his knees and all this. And we could go on and on. We could spend 10 hours talking about this. We all are in agreement. We're 4-for-4. It was egregious. It was awful. It calls for major censure.
And, you know, it's interesting, Mitch. You know, it's funny because we when we were talking about what we wanted to talk about today, and watching that guy get hit in the back by Gronkowski yesterday. I always wonder what Tiger Woods is thinking when he sees who has had, like, I forget how many back surgeries he's had and how it has affected not only his life, but his career, because he was back in the news. And every time they talked about him over the weekend, and he did play well in this special event down in the Bahamas, they talked about health. And guys, is for any athlete, and we were joking about this the other day, Andrew, that Tiger's had 9 surgeries in a non-contact sport. Mitch said it's like he's been standing in the pocket since he won his first Masters. Okay, but health is it's the whole ball game for these guys. And who knew that his career was going to be affected this much? And anybody who's got a bad back will tell you how it influences not just your career, but every motion that you make.
Well, Mike Noah, you know, I would say who knew? No, we all wondered and suspected in his prime. Let's go back 10 years ago. In his prime, I know what I said, which was echoing when people said there's only two things we said that could derail Tiger: injury or romance. And it turned out it wasn't romance.
It's Dan Jenkins. It's Bobby. It's Dan. He must be given credit. Dan Jenkins said the only two things that could stop him are injury or a bad marriage.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, we knew the torque. Mike, you're the you're the golf expert here. We bow to your supremacy and your primacy here. Nah. You were not part of the majority that studied his swing at the time and said, oh, boy, watch out. That back is getting a lot of stress. Huh?
You know, Bob, last night I was having dinner with a friend of mine, and he said, didn't you think he was going to be the greatest golfer of all time? And I was pretty consistent, and you know this, and Mitch knows this, because we talked about it again and again on the Sports Reports. I always said, he's the greatest golfer of all time when he passes Jack. Now, it looked like he was going to pass him breezing, but I always thought those last four or five were going to be hard, but not knowing what was going to happen in his life. Bob, listen, he was, you know, the elephant in the room with this guy is his relationship with Anthony Galea, the patron saint of HGH and everything else, and that, quote, secret, hidden, double secret probation exercise program of him. And I've said this before, and you know, I don't want to open this up because it's a whole different discussion. If his athletic profile were a baseball player, and everything that happened to him happened to a baseball player, what would people say about him?
Yeah, you're right. No, no question.
Well, my question is about this 4-day turn that we just got finished with, and the media reaction to him being there, and the Tiger's back sentences the first round, and all the rest of it. And there are a couple things about that. And Andrew, I'm curious your thoughts on this too, because Tiger is more than just a sports person. He's an American icon. He's an international icon. And here's two thoughts. Well, number one, I said this a bit on Friday. This is a chronic problem. This isn't I had a problem and then I had my surgery and now I'm 100% back. As you mentioned, Michael, if there's 9 surgeries, okay, that's 8 too many on any particular part of your body. And if there's 9, there's going to be 10. If there's 10, there's going to be 11. He is one golf swing away from reaching back and putting his hand on his lower back, and everyone goes, ooh. So that's one thing. And that's obvious, and that's been stated. Two, what about Rory McIlroy? What about Jordan Spieth? What about Day? What about all these guys who are out? He's not like, we've just been waiting for Tiger to come back because everybody sucks at golf right now. And if only Tiger Woods in his early 40s could get back to 3/4 of his game, he could dominate again. There are some really good young players out there right now who are competing.
And Mitch, there's also this idea that he has to come back and save the sport. These young guys have made the sport vastly entertaining in his absence.
I forget what the statistic was, but I saw something where they said Tiger playing alone this weekend had an effect of X. I mean, him playing well still makes a huge difference in terms of ratings, attention. I mean, it does, despite these younger guys being fun to watch, exciting, personality, just a world of difference in terms of getting the larger audience engaged.
We haven't seen any numbers yet from this weekend, have we? Of course, you know, they're up against NFL football. It's not like as if it were in the middle of the summer and they were up, you know, they didn't have this kind of competition. I'll be curious to see what the numbers are, because I side with Andrew, and that's what we're always being told. That I like golf. You love golf. You really love golf. But I appreciate these guys now. I appreciate this crop. I tune in randomly to see what's happening on a Sunday with this crop without Tiger. I was weaned off Tiger. I'm not a problem, but apparently that's a minority view.
Yeah, well, you're a sports reporter, so you're going to be watching. I mean, you got to be watching.
But I'm separate. I'm talking about the fan as opposed to the guy that has to do something professionally so he can talk and not sound like a jackass, you know, although sometimes
as if that's going to get in the way.
That's all. Yeah. Now I'm talking about just my own personal random. Hey, it's Sunday afternoon. It's 4 o'clock. It's 5 o'clock, or it's 5:30. All right, let's see what's happening in that tournament. And I appreciate the greatness of these guys.
He will be 42 years old on December 30th. The statistics for over 40 golfers are not good, and those are over 40 golfers who didn't have X number of surgeries on their back and 9 total. Okay. And broken bones and all that stuff. Okay. So he's facing pretty steep odds. And it was just, listen, I was compelled and engaged by it this weekend. Even around the college football stuff, I was checking in on that tournament to see how he was doing. But the giddy, schoolgirlish coverage of this event was freaking hilarious.
I think that there was a very telling interview Tiger did, I don't know if you guys caught it, with Gino Auriemma, where clearly they're buddies. I think it was sometime in November. And Tiger just sounded, unlike I've ever heard him before, at ease and comfortable. And when he said, "I'm healthy," it really sounded sincere. Totally agree that this whole thing has been blown way out of proportion. But here and there, if you kind of look at what Tiger's been saying and acting, it does feel like it's a Tiger that is different, and we'll see how that pans out.
Well,
but
the healthy approach, not that this is ever going to happen, because he's worth too much money to people. I mean, that's the thing about Tiger Woods.
And that's when steroids won't be brought up until he's not worth that much money.
That's right. And you know, he just makes money for the watch companies when he's doing well. He makes money for the golf balls and the golf club companies and Nike and everything else when he's doing well. He brings ratings to television when he's doing well. And so you know, like a Hollywood star, things are apologized for and things are exaggerated because that person is worth dollars to people, not because they really care about him.
No.
The healthy approach to him would be similar to like what people feel about Phil Mickelson. When Phil Mickelson's a tournament, he's a lightning rod. People like him. I'm sure ratings go up if he's in the hunt. And you accept the fact that he's past his prime, but he might still have one more in him. And you're always going to be intrigued when he's in the tournament, but you're not watching if Phil Mickelson isn't in the hunt, because McIlroy and Dustin Johnson and Jason Day and Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed and Ricky Fowler and Bubba Watson and all these guys are in the hunt. So if people could ever have, and Tiger's having a good day today, but it's not. It's always all or nothing. Either Tiger's in it and then all the cameras just go to him, even if he's 33rd, you know, in the tournament, and the guys who are leading it. I always wonder, you know, what are these guys thinking? Like, hey, hello, I'm at the top of the leaderboard over here, and every camera is running over to see if Tiger is going to make a charge from 9 strokes back. But we've never been measured in the way that we've approached Tiger Woods. We've been over the top. And when he's been number one, that's been great for golf because you're over the top about a superstar. It's like being over the top about Tom Brady. When he's winning, how can you be too much over the top? He's the best. But when he's not, and there's so many absences from the sport that he is, then it feels like this void. And I agree with you, Bob, when you said what you did. There he has been gone enough that I am interested in these other guys. If I hear that Spieth and Day are going at it, I want to watch. If I hear that McIlroy and Spieth or Fowler or these guys are going, I want to watch. I didn't necessarily right at the beginning because I was still learning who they were and watching their game, and it was still sort of the Tiger detox. But he's been gone long enough that we could just get to some healthy place where he could be a guy who participates in the golf tournament, but not the guy who was supposed to be the golf tournament. We'd be better off.
All right, Mike, I'll leave you with a question, which is what, based on what you saw, and we factor in the fact that the idea that the bat could go out of him in the next 5 minutes. Based on what we saw this weekend, what are the chances of him winning a conventional tournament? One more conventional tournament, the John Deere Open. I'm not talking about a major.
I think he is capable. I was shocked at how well he drove the ball. I was shocked at considering the fact that he's off 300 days and has not competed in any way. I was shocked at how hard he swung at the ball. He putted great, but he usually putts great. His short game was flawed at times, but he hit all the shots he wanted to hit. The only time he really struggled was in a big wind on Saturday. I would have not thought before this that he would ever be healthy enough to win another regular tournament. But, you know, my sons have been terrorizing me all weekend long. Dad, what's his size again for the green jacket? I said, shut up. Let's see him play the, you know, in San Diego. And let's see him play the Florida swing before we start awarding him the game ball.
Have four good rounds, and he had three.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Before we get to the parting shots, I want to remind you that the Sports Reporters is brought to you by Freshly. Freshly delivers fully cooked, prepared meals straight to your door. No more coming home and wondering what's for dinner because Freshly's team of chefs and nutritionists are here to save the day. You get to skip the shopping, the chopping, the cleanup. All you have to do is heat them up and boom, your meal is ready to eat in only 3 minutes. To try Freshly out, go to Freshly.com/sportsreporters and you can get $20 off your first week. You have to put that Sports Reporters thing in at the end there. Freshly.com/sportsreporters to get $20 off your first week. That will be six meals for just $39 plus free shipping. The offer is only valid for a limited time. So go to Freshly.com/sportsreporters for $20 off and free shipping. Eat well. Consider dinner done. Time now for our parting shots, and Mike Lupica leads off.
Geno Smith started his first game in a long time on Sunday for the Giants and played reasonably well despite a couple of fumbles before the Giants lost their 10th game. And when the game was over, here's how Smith segued out of support for outgoing Giants coach Ben McAdoo, who's so far underwater at this point he can't even see the sky any longer, to a swipe at his former coach in Jersey, Rex Ryan. Quote, I did see one of my ex-coaches say he didn't want me to be his quarterback, and that really upset me, you know? A guy that we saved his job in 2013, we fought our ass off for him over the years. For him to come out and say that just shows you how much of a coward he is. So that's how Geno embraced the moment of being a starter again in the NFL by calling someone who hurt his feelings a coward. You ever wonder if there are markers to let us know where we are as a culture? That's one. This level of playground discourse in a Twitter world. But who knows? Maybe Geno thinks he can grow up and be president someday.
Where will you be at 5:30 Eastern on December 29th? Well, you should be parked in front of your TV or viewing device watching history. That's when New Mexico State ends the longest drought in FBS ranks by meeting Utah State in the Nova Home Loans Arizona Bowl. The last time the Aggies were in a bowl was 1960 when they beat, Utah State, to complete, get this, an undefeated season. You can't make this stuff up. The Aggies won their last two to finish at a bowl-eligible 6-6, and they did so behind the arm of quarterback Tyler Rogers, who averages, get this, 319 yards a game in the air, mainly to wide out Jaleel Scott, who has caught eight of those for eight touchdowns. Better yet, you can go to Tucson and take part in both the Desert Diamond Casino Tailgate Festival and the Downtown Block Party, Daily Double. Now, that's from 3 to 8, by the way, so in case you're keeping track. This is a great story. Now, no offense, Utah State, but on December 29, it's Go Aggies! Oh, wait a minute. Utah State is our Aggies, too. I told you can't make this stuff up.
A very well-known journalist recently said in an article on Stan Van Gundy that, quote, if you spend any time with Van Gundy, you can't help but observe this much. He's sincere. He oozes sincerity, unquote. Sincerity on what? Politics, American culture. Van Gundy, Steve Kerr, and Greg Popovich haven't just spoken up. They've spoken up in articulate ways. They talk openly about our current shortcomings in D.C., leadership, government. When Popovich became the sixth winningest coach in NBA history after his team beat the Suns, the press was all ready to get his reaction. And he said, quote, we won a basketball game, but considering what's going on today, it's pretty meaningless. It was the same day of the Texas church shootings that left 26 dead. Popovich was in the Air Force, has represented Team USA basketball time and time again. First NBA team to have a female coach, Becky Hammon, on staff. He stands up against the president. Oh, and he's also a five-time champion. Steve Kerr, I'd say, has admirably followed Pop's lead. It's time for other coaches to speak up. Why? Well, over 20 of the 30 coaches in the NBA are white men. Coaches are supposed to lead. It's not just leading the players. It's time for them to be held accountable, be on the right side of history. And meanwhile, it's okay to say sincerely, thank you, Pop.
Andrew, you did that like you've been on the show for years.
Well, I've been watching it for years, so you know.
That's how hard it is. Just watch and do. If only the Detroit Lions had been as tough to take down as their old building. On Sunday, after years of sitting vacant in Pontiac, Michigan, the Silver Dome was to be imploded. People gathered in the parking lot. TV cameras rolled. Out here in Detroit, watching a building come down is major entertainment. However, true to anything associated with the Detroit Lions, there was bound to be an element of disappointment. With former players on hand, city officials, a ton of looky-loos, the lever was pushed, smoke came from the giant structure, and nothing. It didn't fall. Didn't come down. It just steamed up a little, like your window's getting foggy. And then, as Elton John once sang, it's still standing. As blow-ups go, it was a fart. And all we can say here in Detroit is, how could we have been surprised? Perhaps the gods knew that a franchise that hasn't won a playoff game in 26 years should try to preserve any memory of the last win that it can. The Silverdome was the last place the Lions won their division 24 years ago, the last place that Barry Sanders carried a football, and he's the last running back worth mentioning in their history, and their last playoff win. Maybe the good Lord just wants us to retain the fond memories for a few more months. So this morning, the building is still here with a lot more cracks in it. Maybe it will fall down on its own, which is also very Lions-like. But for now, ironically, unlike a lot of things with the Detroit Lions history, the Silverdome was one thing that did not go kaboom. Thank you for joining us today on the Sports Reporters. We do this every Monday and Friday. And we will be back here, of course, on Friday morning. You can check it out on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you get the podcast. If you like what you hear, leave us a review. That's always interesting to read, and we appreciate that. Andrew, great having you here with us. Thanks
An
for
honor.
Coming
Thank on. You, guys. Yeah.
It was fun. Come yeah. on back.
All right.
And on behalf of Andrew Jenks and Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a terrific week.